Chapter 13 One thing at a time, Johnny told himself. Do each thing properly. Each one as it comes up and each one in its turn. He had read that in a book from the Mann Library. He had been looking for cures for radiation, and he found some. And he'd also found a book about how to handle confusion. It came from too many things at once, and that was certainly happening now. The drone, the possibility of a cyclo counterattack, the outcome of a compound battle still in question. No reports yet of the attacks on other mine sites. One could easily get confused, make a mistake, even panic. Stay calm, one thing at a time. Dancer had been racing flat out southward. That was not the right thing to do. He could founder her. He began to alternate a trot with a run. She was breathing better. The light was failing. Something as silly as a tripped horse could wreck everything. Trot, run, trot, run. 20 miles. They would make it. He had a mine radio in his pocket, small by cyclo standards. At 10 miles, he began to call Glenn Cannon, Thor's pilot. Johnny spoke into the mic as he rode. At about 11 miles, Glenn Cannon's voice came back.
Is that you, McTyler?
The voice sounded a bit weak. Can you see a running horse from where you are? Said Johnny. There was a long pause. Then,
yes, you're a bit 3 miles northeast of me. You got Turtle?
Yes, but he's all tied up at the moment. There was a silence and then a short, barking laugh. Some of the tension had gone out of Glenn Cannon's voice when he spoke next.
What was he after up there?
Long story. No time now. Just be calm. Johnny said aloud, the girls are safe. Thor is hurt, but all right. A sigh of relief at the other end. Can you still pilot a plane? Said Johnny. Pause.
My ribs are a bit caved in, and I have a twisted ankle. That's what's taken so long getting back to the compound. But yes, McTyler, of course I can still pilot a plane.
Keep traveling toward the compound. Have a light ready to flash. I'll send a mine car for you. They'll need air cover.
I have a light. I'm sorry about the air cover.
It was my fault, said Johnny. Good luck. Dancer alternately trotted and ran. Keep calm. Things were not hopeless. They had a fighting chance. There were bright spots. They had agreed not to blow up the whole compound. The historian wanted the library. Angus wanted the machine shops. They evidently hadn't sent any radioactive bullets into the domes. Except for the drone and its escort, they still apparently had air control. At 5.5 miles, he began calling Robert the Fox at the compound, hoping somebody was monitoring the mine radio. The schoolmaster answered. Johnny was surprised, for there were several classified as non-combatants. The parson, the old women, the historian, and the schoolmaster. Johnny shortly heard a relieved Robert the Fox. The girls are safe, said Johnny. There was a pause at the other end as Robert the Fox apparently passed the word along. When the mic opened next, from that end, Johnny heard some cheering in the background. The news was evidently popular.
We're holding out here, said Robert the Fox. I have to talk to you about something when you get here, but not on this open line.
Dancer skirted a clump of trees. It was getting pretty dark. Those apes can't talk English, said Johnny.
No matter, still can't talk about it. When will you be here?
About 15 minutes. Said Johnny.
Come in through the ravine to the north. There's a lot of heavy return fire near the compound.
Right, said Johnny. Are the planes okay?
We pulled them back to better cover in the ravine. We don't have pilots.
I know. Listen now. Have somebody put the following items in one plane. Warm clothing, a robe, mittens for me, something to eat, some plain non-radioactive limpet mines, an assault rifle, an air mask with plenty of air bottles. I'll be flying at 150,000 feet. There was a silence at the other end, and Johnny prompted, Got that?
Yes, said Robert the Fox. That will be done.
He certainly didn't sound very eager. Send out a couple of mine cars, said Johnny. He gave the locations. Better send a man or two to help bring in Turtle.
Turtle,
said Robert the Fox.
It's the naked truth, said Johnny. Get that plane ready. I'll be taking off just as soon as I arrive.
A silence. Then, will do. He went off the air. About 5 minutes later, a mine car passed him going north in the twilight. It was the parson, one of the old women, and a Scot with his arm in a sling. The parson raised his hand in a benediction. No, it was a salute. They were off to get Thor and the girls and Turl. A great length of hoist chain was flying out behind the mine car. Johnny glanced back. The old woman was carrying a blast rifle. The sound of the fire exchange was getting loud. The spray of the fire system was shooting 200 feet in the air. Under it winked the blue-green of blast rifles. The stuttering orange flashes of assault weapons were plainer in the floodlights that were on all over the compound. Johnny sped Dancer down into the opening of the ravine and pulled to a halt beside the two remaining planes. Streaks of blast rifle shots laced the sky above their heads. The horse was blowing heavily, covered with lather, but not foundered. One thing at a time, Johnny told himself. You can catch the drone. 2. Robert the Fox had his old cape thrown over his anti-radiation battle dress. His grizzled hair was singed on one side. His face was composed, but there was a hint of concern. He grabbed Johnny's wrist and gave it a hearty shake of welcome. Johnny looked at the singed hair. How are casualties?
Light, said Robert the Fox. Surprisingly light. They don't want to show themselves to us. It impeded their aim. And it's like fighting in a rainstorm. Look, you're not wearing anti-radiation.
That water is washing radiation away as fast as you fire it in, said Johnny. I have something to do. There's no breathe gas in that drone. I don't need radiation cover.
Johnny, can't that drone wait until the mine sites have been flattened? It will take the drone up to 18 hours to get where it's going overseas. We tracked it on the search equipment of this plane, which is to say, we tracked the escort. The drone has wave cancellers.
Johnny opened the plane door. It was all ready. There was bread and meat on the seat. An old woman popped up beside him and handed him a cup of steaming herb tea that smelled suspiciously of whiskey. When he looked at her, questioning her presence in this battle zone, she said,
I can't eat bullets,
and laughed a cackling laugh. Robert's hand was detaining him.
We still have radio silence successfully in.
They had agreed to give the remote mine-site attack pilots 12 hours of radio silence to let them finish off the outlying areas with total surprise, if possible.
That's more than they need. We can shorten it, and they can converge on that drone.
It's headed for Scotland, said Johnny. That's its first stop.
I know.
Johnny finished off the hot drink and started to climb into the plane. The detaining hand again.
There's something I've got to tell you.
When Johnny had stopped to listen, he continued,
We may not have hit Cyclo.
I know, said Johnny.
That means that we may need all the planes and equipment we can get here. They're in hangars, under us. We don't have men enough to take the place by assault, and we mustn't destroy it.
You can work this out with Glenn Cannon. You'll have a pilot in half an hour or so. You can bash it in from the air.
He made to get into the plane, and again Robert's hand was on his sleeve.
We had a funny thing happen just before sunset, said Robert. A tank surrendered.
Johnny stepped back onto the ground. He might as well spend this time getting into the warm clothing needed at high altitudes, and he proceeded to do so.
Go on.
Robert took a deep breath, but before he went on, a runner came up to tell him the historian had delivered a new load of ammunition from the academy. Robert told him to see it was passed out. The blast fire needles continued to lash overhead in the now quite dark night.